searched this lake. The muskies run away from me. I'd take a 40 or even a 33.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, Jay Bird.
Hey, Steve.
It is getting cold.
It is.
What's it like in the Northwoods right now?
Oh, we had a cold and rainy day yesterday. High of 39. Just lovely, but it wasn't bad actually today. So, yeah, fishing's been good.
Freddy's popped some good ones. People are popping some good ones. If you're willing to do what it takes to get out there and be the frozen chosen, if you will.
So. Yeah, right.
It's never easy, but right now it's easy to get your 2024 Muskie Shop calendar.
Calendars just came out. Ink's still wet, Steve.
It's still wet for $9.99. You can keep up with the dates.
Yep. That's one way to put it.
What day is it? Well, for $10 you'll have it. So
what time is it, Steve?
It is.
Little inside joke.
I know what that meant.
Very little.
Anyway, he knows. He knows who the big crocodile you are. The illustrious Buck McNeely, outdoors master. What time is it? That's all that matters. Jay, did you get the crocodile video I sent you the other day?
I did not. Oh, the crocodile.
I'll send you that. Yeah, well, okay. We're done. You'll love that. Anyway. Okay. So, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about how there's this hot fall transition, this shallow water bite and this top water bite and the blade bite, and Booker talked about it and everybody. It's starting to come apart. Now we need to make a move out to the deeper transition. Now we need to get into jerk baits. We need to get into rubber. We need to get into krakens. We need to get into tubes. We need to be doing something different, right?
Yes. So,
you know, it's that magic period is over for most part. You might have a warm-up. You might have an Indian summer here or there. But we need to start thinking about breaks, break lines, outside weed edges, basically countering from the shallow to the deep edge where a lot of people struggle. So I called Jamie Pastilli. Jamie's a guide up in Ottawa, which is a weird part of the world, right? Not a lot of people think about Ottawa. They don't think about the St. Lawrence, the Ottawa River, that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But it plays for you New York guys, Maine guys, anybody in that eastern zone. But it's getting cold there. It's getting cold where I'm at. It's getting cold in the Northwoods. It's getting cold in Minnesota. What are we going to do to stay in front of fish, right? This is a heck of a time to really encounter a monster. There's no doubt about it, right?
Yep.
Obviously, Jay, the sucker thing's going on. What's going on with suckers? Obviously, Muskie Shop's got them. But what are you hearing on the sucker bite? What are you seeing? Like, where are people placing suckers? What's sort of the drill right now?
I would say that probably half the people that I talked to that fished this last past week here, their best presentation was live suckers. The other half being jerk baits and soft plastics in general.
Right.
Like you were just referring to. That's what's been strong around here. I know Freddie's been using some dive rise action and getting some fish and some good ones, but probably, half the people were using suckers and they were getting the sucker down. They were working deep edges, casting up and over the weeds. And a lot of people that when the sucker bite's going, it's usually multiple fish a day. If you can get out, you know,
if you got multiple suckers. Yeah.
Yeah, well, sometimes you get lucky and be able to, you know, reuse one, but that don't count on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can't bet on that, right?
So, yeah, that's been pretty good. You know, I mean, I think the key is just get that sucker just below visible light penetration and keep it out of the weeds but keep it near the edge and the breaks. And that's your best bet right now on northern Wisconsin lakes. Guys been doing pretty well doing that.
You know, you've got to entice. I mean, you're going to pick up some fish on your big rubber, your bulldogs, your Medusas, you know, whether it be a Red October, Toothy Tough, you're going to pick fish up, but bring them into the sucker. I think the sucker placement is important. I see a lot of guys where the sucker becomes this arbitrary endeavor that's on a bobber behind the boat, right? Here's the sucker, and he's just kind of floating along. I like to have that thing mid-boat or near casting presentations, right?
Yeah, I know you do, yeah. Right,
my intent is to move a fish, on big rubber or a jerk bait or a dive and rise like a Titan or a Suic, and entice him into the sucker. So I want that somewhere near my casting presentation, right? So behind the boat doesn't do a lot for me. They're somewhere side of the boat. I like the 8-foot shield rod because it doesn't stick out too far, but I can sort of position that thing right where I'm casting. So entice, yeah. Bring them in. You know, they might not hit the bulldog. They might hit the Toothy Tough, but they're going to look at that sucker and go, oh, I got to stick around for this.
Yeah, you're saying you're running a center rod position in the middle of the boat.
Right.
So
my,
if there's outside angler of my, in the front, right, and the back, yeah.
Yeah, outside of my figure eight, the outside of the guy in the back's figure eight sort of brings them to the sucker, if you will.
Yep, cool.
And that's sort of my thought process there when I want to entice and then have that as a follow-up. You know, a lot of guys will just do that bobber deal behind the boat, and it's, you know, it'll work, it'll pick up a fish, but it's not the same intensity as that fish that was coming in on an artificial and goes, whoa, there's something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting with panoptics where you watch fish that come off the bottom and just find a sucker versus fish that find the sucker because of live, or excuse me, artificial presentation. So two different schools of thought. So that's something to consider. You know, we did the sucker video, Jay, as far as like how to rig them, how to do this, how to do that here recently. So
yeah.
If you're thinking about it, go to the Musky Shops YouTube channel. You can see some different options there. And we talk about, excuse me, how to rig them. I think the simpler the better on your sucker rig, right? And I think the quicker you strike on the quick strike, if you will, right? It's a quick strike for a reason. I've said it before.
Yep.
Just get it over with. Just hammer them.
Yeah.
Just, you've got to hit those fish hard. Do not play on a live bait. Don't play around. I'm talking drop that rod and you shellac them right in the face. Stick them in the head, Jay.
Stick one in the head. You got
Stick
it.
Stick one in the head.
Hit them hard.
Hit them hard and hit them often is going to be the play. But, you know, a lot of people are going to struggle. Your average musky angler right now, they're post-turnover. I mean, there's a lot of post-turnover right now, Jay.
Yeah, it's right. Looking that way. Right.
It is the wild, wild west of musky fishing. Depending on what body of water you're on, what's going on, you've got to pay attention to your forage base. You got to pay attention to your patterning as far as what's happening with bait fish. Where am I staging, or where bait fish staging? Therefore, where am I casting or where am I trolling? And a lot of times this time of year, trolling is going to be hyper successful. And I'm not talking this shallow subsurface trolling. Me and Jamie, I talked about Jamie Pastillo will be on the show here in a minute. We talk about some shallow trolling stuff. But, you know, getting baits down to 8, down to 10 feet is imperative, right? Contouring, understanding what I'm trolling as far as the cover and the structure. So yes, there's weeds, but if I run my baits at X, Y, and Z, I know I'm not going to foul every 10 feet or whatever it might be. A little bit of forethought, a little bit of knowledge of the water you're fishing is going to be very productive. So don't go out this time of year willy-nilly, right? We're not looking for a fish. We're looking for the fish. if that makes sense. We're looking for trophies. We're looking for serious fish. Jay, what's sort of the read on what's happening up north? I mean, is it colder? Is it warmer? What do you expect? You've been up there for about a trillion years. I mean, is this normal? Is this average? Is it warmer, colder, late ice, early ice? What's your thought?
It's right on, really, when it boils down to it. It hasn't been extremely cold at night, but the daytime highs have been a little below normal for weeks. So, you know, it seems like lake temps right now there's a lot of mid and upper 40s, actually. So, you know, pretty much post turnover, although the real big deep lakes are still probably doing their thing right now in terms of turnover, but can't verify that 100%, so I haven't been at work for a couple of days, but I'll find out some more information after the weekend as everything's sliding down and we got a cold week coming. So it's not like we're gonna have ice anytime soon. It hasn't even been freezing at night lately, so we're good there. It's just that, you know, it's that time of the year. You were just talking about trolling. One thing I was thinking about that, I haven't heard the conversation yet you had with your buddy there, but you know, up here a lot of times in you could almost consider this late fall, right? And we're almost in that late fall pattern right now where it's post turnover, and you get times the forage, I think, has a more definable depth that it runs at. So
yeah,
and
we had that conversation where he was seeing bait balls that are like very solidified, or bait balls that are scattered due to predators. And what you're saying is, like, this time we're looking for definable, right? Which might be a depth range, correct?
Yeah. You know, a lot of times you'll go out on the bigger deep lakes and it's like, okay, bait's not above 28 feet. And it seems to be at 28 feet in a lot of different areas. It's just like, well, troll just above them, get the bait way down and you know, present your opportunity to a hog of a lifetime at that point. Got to get down deep and watch the magic happen every once in a while.
Yeah, so real, well, yeah, no joke. But really keen eye on what forage is doing and how they're reacting. So anyway, we just touched on, let's go to the interview here. I was just talking to Jamie Pastillion and see what he has to say. What do you think, Jay?
Cool. Yeah, love to. Here.
All right, guys, I have Jamie Pastilli on the line, the man, the myth, the legend. You have been tearing them up, man. We talk all the time. We text back and forth, and you've been nailing some slops. Jamie, I want to have you on the show. We don't have a ton of guests on here just because it's you know, the typical, my name's Herb Knutson, come fish with me. But if you're looking for a serious guy, Jamie's your man. I'm so sick of, like, everybody's a guide or everything's this or everything's that. If you want my word for it, you want my recommendation, Jamie's the guy. You're up in the Ottawa area, which is a super unique fishery. Fill everybody in sort of what it's like over there. Because, you know, when we think Canadian muskies, everybody bring a Shield Lake. What's the difference in your neck of the woods?
Oh, man. Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thanks, bud.
Really appreciate you having me on here. We got loads of trophy waters, you know, within an hour of Ottawa. You know, we got the mighty St. Lawrence. We got the Rideau, we got the Madawaska, which is more of a numbers game, and then of course we got the legendary waters of the mighty Ottawa.
To most people, it's just, no one even thinks about that area. But I mean, are you kidding me? St. Lawrence, and you know, that's about all anybody knows. But you can have some crazy multi-fish days over there, from what I understand. Is that correct?
Yeah. So each body of water kind of has their own personality, and you know, depending on weather conditions, depending on you know, after big rain, the Ottawa can get pretty disgusting in terms of kind of look like a double coffee. But regardless of whatever weather we do have, there's always a place to go fishing. The St. Lawrence is gin clear, the Ottawa is murky, and then, you know, the Rideau and the Madawaska are kind of in between.
Something I've always heard, that you know, I fished the St. Lawrence one time as a kid. I mean, it, when people ask about it on the podcast, I sort of defer to, that's an animal into itself, right? What's going on with that body of water? It's always in my head. It's always a deep fishery. I know there's some shallow options, but is it generally a deeper fishery, or what's your opinion? Your opinion's far better than mine. What's going on there?
It is different than everywhere else. It's got the most current of all the other places. So I would agree. It is more of a deeper, especially, you know, all year, like fish do. You know, move up shallow for sure, but I would say, for, you know, compared to the other bodies of water, it's for sure a deeper fishery.
Yeah, talk about a monster fish. I mean, there's some biggins in there. I would say there's no question of what that thing can turn out. Well, you know, to get your take, because like I said, I have my purview. We have the purview in the North Woods, or I talked to Herbeck in Ontario. What's going on in your neck of the woods? What, you know, anglers that are, you know, in New York, we got so many listeners. New York, got people even in Maine, that upper region, over in your neck of the woods. What's happening right now? What's the fall transition like, sort of in that habitat zone?
We had, this year was a little different. Ottawa's kind of become the Midwest of Tornado Alley. So this summer, you know, two tornadoes, crazy, crazy transition periods, which, you know, they're good to fish, but you got to be careful of the changes in the weather. And we also had all the forest fire stuff that we had to deal with. So we had some days that air quality was absolutely horrendous, but then the fishing was insane. Like, remember two or three days this summer, I was the only boat out on the water because people were worried about the air quality. And I might pay for that later, but I did not pay for it that day. And now the fall, we had September up here, like you guys, was, you know, extremely warm. And it was kind of windy all summer, too. And then September was, like, hot and calm, right? So we had a totally different fishery to deal with. But now, you know, we're into the prime time. This is, you know, as a muskie angler, this is what you look forward to. It's, you know, we call it the playoffs. Water temps have dropped probably 15 degrees in the last 10 days or so, and the fish are snapping like crazy.
Yeah, what's kind of going on presentation-wise? What that time of year? Well, what's your water temp right now, and what are you looking at presentation-wise in that scenario?
We're about 57, 58 as of today. You know, the fish are where they're supposed to be. They're on the deeper weed lines. Even got a couple out suspended in the deeper water. So the fish are moving out, you know, compared to a couple of weeks ago when we were catching them up shallow. But working bigger jerk baits out in the middle, working some plastics. Finally, that Kraken. Working the Kraken. Yeah, you know, I'm lucky enough to have one of those, and I'm a lure geek like you are, right? I'm always tweaking and tinkering and adding weights and adding this and adding this, and I was going too heavy, so I took the weights out, and now it's like,
You can't. The thing is, you texted me earlier today, and it's like, that bait, that's going to be the biggest thing with people. And I just had some podcasters on the boat this week, and we had High Bright Sun Dead Flat, like the worst of the worst you could ask for, right? And we had three on, two in. And the trick was, don't overwork it. Just let it do its thing. And when you just let that bait be, they just come unglued. I mean, they can't handle it. So, yeah, don't go too crazy on the mods with it, but you can dial it in. But that's awesome, you scored a fish on it. You know, what's sort of happening, you think, with forage movement? Is it a matter, like, the muskies, are they on the same linear plane? Are they feeding up? Are they looking for fish? What's sort of the scenario in that zone when you're in that high 50s, kind of eking towards the mid 50s thought process? Is it mid forage? Are they feeding up? Are they feeding down as a linear plane? What's your thought?
I think they're feeding up. I know it's a bait ball in the last 2 weeks. I was marking huge schools of bait, and now it's kind of smaller clumps kind of moved around, which I like to, you throw one bait through the buffet. Now it's, you throw something different and it tends to get waxed. But fish are kind of going up. Even, you know, a lot of people are are afraid to fish deep water, kind of do what they're doing all year. But, you know, casting in 20 feet of water, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
And we fish this week just fishing deeper water.
You know, sometimes there's merit to just turning around and throwing the other direction, you know, the old nature cast towards open water. And, you know, especially when you're dealing with those suspended bait balls, because, you know, and if you're wondering what I was asking him in sort of guide talk, because you'll find at times where you have to be above the forage, or sometimes you have to be on the even plane to get the bite. And that's what we're going for. So, like, when you get suspendos, it might be a matter of above or on the same plane, right? And again, we were talking about the crack, and sometimes you got to, like, run it over them and then below them, and they'll just snap. They'll just come unglued when it goes past them. This time of year in that habitat range, you know, sort of that zone, is it big rubber? Is it dive and rise? Is it crankbaits? What's sort of your thought process?
I do well in all three of the baits you mentioned. So dive and rise for sure. Big rubber and even crankbaits, both casting and trolling.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, especially when the fish are up higher in deeper water, a lot of people always, you know, troll longer lines and they're fishing underneath the fish.
Yes.
Where, you know, muskies will go up to eat, but I don't know too many muskies that'll go down to eat.
So yeah, they don't know it's there. Yeah.
So. Yeah, so I'm primarily a caster, you know, depending on, I get a lot of newbie guests, so we do spend a lot of time trolling, and
mm-hmm.
this year we back the heck out of the fish, you know, running a lot shorter lines and keeping the baits up and getting the fish to go and move them. Had a nice one the other day, you know, trolling 20 feet of line behind the boat.
Don't be afraid. I mean, that's the thing, dude. You can't be afraid of 15, 20, 25 feet of line. I mean, I think it freaks people out when you go, well, they're not boat shy when the trolling motor's going, so it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, I think that's something that a lot of people go, oh, my goodness, if I don't have 50, 60 feet, they're not going to come up and hit. You know, short line does it more often than not, for sure.
Yeah, and you get usually those fish will smoke it really hard, too, right? They're not afraid of it.
They're not afraid of it.
They have something in mind, and They're going to destroy.
It always cracks me up. Like, the shortest I run with any consistency, right, is this kind of, I'm not going to say what it is, but I'll tell you off air. I got a little trick with some big trolling baits with about 16, 17 feet out handheld, right? And I just make people hold them. I'm like, just hold this bait and just stand here with this rod. You see them come up and smoke it. Like, you see the fish roll over where you're trolling, and it just scares people to death. You know, you're just getting smoked. So, short lines, it sounds typical as far as that. What would you say are some different things in your fishery that are unique to what you're doing, or unique as far as whether it be patterning or how you're approaching the fishing sort of on that east coast kind of weird habitat? I don't say weird, but weird to me, weird to a lot of people, that habitat range. What do you see that you think differentiates it from, say, Ontario, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and down?
I think one thing that we have here, probably more than anybody else, is fly anglers. Like, I've seen fly every day. And I guess I probably guide about 10 days a year, mm-hmm. you know, guys wanting to chuck big bugs around. And especially in the fall, I saw two guys out today throwing, you know, two different boats throwing flies. So, and that's a whole unique presentation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously a time for that, just like there is everything else in the tackle box. But unique up here, I don't know. I guess, you know, we got a lot of big moon eyes up here. The muskies will feed on the moon eyes. And then later in the fall, I can't tell you the magical water temps, but there's the Emerald Shiner run that the fish kind of go up, and that's usually a magical time. So I'm pumped, and I got my calendar set for that one.
Right. You're just checking the temps every day. So, yeah. And guys, full disclosure, the way I hooked up with Jamie, big Titan fan. You did really well on the Titan. You know, I love it when people that listen to the podcast hear it from somebody else. you've told me stuff. Just talk about what you did this year with the Titan and with clients and working it. I would love to hear that, because if people on the that listen to me get sick of me harping on it. What's sort of your take on that thing? What are you doing with it?
Like, Titan wasn't available in Ottawa, and then thank God the Muskie Shop has them available. Got a couple up here, and thanks to Eric, and been working with Livingston, full disclosure, for the last little while.
Absolutely.
But an easy to work bait. There's no wrong way to work it. You can work it as hard as you want. It doesn't blow out. Usually when you're guiding, I'll throw, have somebody, especially in the summer, somebody throwing blades, somebody throwing a jerkbait, me throwing rubber. But there were some days this year that everybody's like, can I get one of those? Can I get one of those? Like, I kind of tinkered with, the standard tails have been great, but I've, I'm at the bait shop buying different rubbers and chopping them and trying to figure out the little solution, right? But even straight out of the box, and the different weight systems that they come with, there's a solution for everybody, and they're so easy to work. So I have one, heat seeker pattern that I think I'm at 26 fish for this year, right? So,
oh my God. Is there even paint left? That's the question.
Yeah, it looks like my dog chewed the hell out of it, right?
But that's the best bait. When you get 26 on one bait and you're going, I talked to this guy a few weeks ago and we were gabbing. He's like, yeah, there's days with the whole boat throwing them because they're just moving on them. And that's the thing. There's no wrong way to fish it. It's just going to pull fish up. As far as tails, I've been really into, and I've mentioned it before in the podcast, I'll take little boot tail, swim bait tails. What are you doing on yours?
Yeah, even classic grubs are, like you said, little swim bait tails. Uh-huh. And I even had an invader that died on me, and I still have the tail, so I kind of chopped it off. And
God, grief.
Back. So it's you got a good old being a musky guide, right? It's
right.
You're always looking for the perfect little
the
thing.
Tweak.
And then when it works, okay, work once, I got to do it again, and it works more than once. Okay, we're on a pattern.
So we got something now, yeah.
But, awesome. the Titan bait that I have, well, all of them, I think I counted, probably 14 or 15 people got their first muskie this year on Titans, right?
Oh, there you
so
go.
It's pretty cool, and we had a lot of rainy days this year, and we got a bunch of Livingston baits inside the boat, and they're all chirping, the hell's that sound, right?
there's a way to fix that, folks. Super glue on the terminal. So it sounds like crickets going off. Oh my goodness. It's like a troll. Dude, it's like some days if it's too humid or it's wet outside or raining, it's like there's a troll groaning in the bottom of your boat.
I won't lie. The first time I fished, I had a whole bunch of, my Livingston order came in and it was raining, and I got in the car and I got in the truck, was on the way home, and I was like, what's that noise? And I actually pulled over thinking something was wrong with my vehicle, and then I was like, I'm an idiot. It's my bait.
It's just shad in distress. Typical.
Yeah, exactly.
Typical shad.
They're all going at different times. I'm like, what's that noise?
Dude, I told everybody on the podcast one time, but I'll tell it again. So when the Titan first came out, we got this email from this guy, and he was pissed. He was pissed. So he got his baits, and he put them in his tackle box, right? And that was it. Went fishing. So he's walking by his water heater and keeps hearing the sound and thinks his water heater's going to blow up and calls a plumber. And the plumber comes out and says, sir, that sound's not coming from your water heater. It's coming from your tackle box. So he paid a plumber to come out in the box.
Why didn't he call my mechanic?
No joke. Yeah, got towed home. So, man,
another unique thing up here too, one thing we do is we troll jerk baits. I don't know if that's a popular
trolling
thing.
Absolutely.
with the, you know, Dive and Rise and Titans and, you know, 100 other baits out there. It's a great way to cover water and work that arm and get your forearm workout in there. But it's pretty awesome when you get one trolling. You're trolling a little slow and working that bait, and whack. It's a great feeling.
Absolutely. How long do you guys have left in the season, you think? When do things sort of close down? Is it an ice-up thing, or does the season end? What's the deal for you?
Yeah, it's as soon as we get – technically, it's the 15th of December, and mm-hmm. the thing for it's got a lot of float, so we can usually head in down there. But the Ottawa and the Rideau and the Madawaska, typically late November – water temps are a bit above average right now, so I'm hoping that, you know, we can prolong the season as much. But it really depends. You know, you get those days. My last day of the season last year, I had to break ice to get through, and then, you know, break ice through a whole channel, and then you get to one spot and the ice is too thick. You got to go to the place where it's a little bit more current, and then, you know, so I think as soon as the eyelets on the rod start freezing, that's when I'm done. But
usually around December, I'm breaking ice for my gin and tonics when I get off the boat. So it's just, you know, whatever you got to, you know, it's a struggle being a guy. Do what you have to do. So
December.
You know, pray for Jamie while he might wreck and die, and I might get frostburn in my freezer. So, they're chipping away, just trying to fill that water for Crystal up for one more drink. So, man, what would you say, and it's a neophyte question, and I apologize. In your neck of the woods, because I know so little about it, it's so interesting to me, what's the prime time? Is it like that July-August thing, or is it like prime is fall for you? What's like that neck of the woods where you're just hitting it? Because there's so much territory over there, and there's just so little coverage on it, and I'm not trying to get you give away the ghost or anything, but when are things like really popping off in that neck of the woods?
Oh, boy. I had one of the most stellar Septembers I've ever had. You know, August is typically, you know, top water bite, a little shallower. So, you know, people that are new to the sport tend to get their first fish. Early season is fantastic. And if I had to pick a time, and then November, but, you know, unfortunately, most hardcore musky anglers up here, like our guiding season is pretty slow when it gets cold, but that's the time when you got to bundle up and get going, right? Like you can get a true fish of a lifetime. I got the biggest fish last year on the last day of the season, right? So it was not comfortable, but at the same time, you pull up a, you know,
when a guy from Ottawa says it's not comfortable, I'm out. So, if it's above 60, Jamie, if it's above 65, I'm not comfortable. How cold was it? That's the question. Not comfortable for you is what? Negative 39? What was not comfortable?
I think it was like -4, -5. Right? cold enough that like you have to hope that the person, nobody else is leaving at the boat ramp, or the boat ramp freezes when they take their boat out, and then you're trying to get out.
Oh yeah.
No, we got bags, all that stuff, but I think that, you know, the more terrible the conditions are in the fall, the Mother Nature sometimes goes, okay, you're out fishing today, we'll give you a little something, you know?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, mix it up a little bit. That's funny. I mean, when you say that, because, I mean, you have a boat go out in front of you, there's just slush and ice everywhere when you're having to melt the ramp, but can -4? I've never fished a -4 in my life. how do you contend? And we've talked about like some different tips and tricks, but how do you even cast in that? Like, are you just rotating rods and reels every few minutes? What's the deal there to deal with ice?
Usually a couple pairs of gloves, right? And they get wet and frozen. I go to the next set, and then a couple of pairs of hot pockets. And, you know, I think I don't eat a lot when I'm guiding throughout the season. Uh-huh. Several reasons, but in the fall I do eat a lot more. I think, you know, when you're full, you're kind of warmer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a little, when you know when the your eyelets start freezing up when you're reeling, that's when I get a little frustrated with that. But
do you have a trick? Do you guys have a trick for that up there, or anything you're doing to alleviate the eyelets freezing?
Yeah, go home.
Absolutely. Well, it's the same reason. I don't know if we have the same reason I don't eat on God trips. Mine is I might throw up. So, long.
I'm always focused, right?
Huh?
You know, and you're like in the musky guy brain, right? Where you're thinking all over the map and you're trying to make things happen and where should I go next and kind of thinking 2-3 spots ahead.
Right. That's the problem. You forget. You're just like, I have to force myself now to like sort of eat and drink on a schedule on the boat, because I remember in my 20s, I would just go all day long and be like, okay, it's 90 degrees and I haven't drank anything all day long. You know, you're just like, just go, just thinking like a crazy person. So, but yeah, that sounds miserable. 4 degrees. That's horrific. Sorry, I'm just fixated on that when it's like my cold time in the winter is like 44. So the juxtaposition between north and south is pretty strong. What would you say, you know, as far as obviously we're in October right now, what's going to happen in that habitat zone? You know, because again, I'm not trying to make you speak for everybody south of you, but there's a whole other realm there. Of stuff that's in the States in that neck of the woods. What's the next move for muskies in your habitat range?
Typically for me, I always go deeper. If you want to simplify it for somebody that's maybe new to musky fishing, if you just position your boat where you go in the summer, go to the same place and just cast the other way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of big rubber or, you know, deep diving crankbaits if you're trolling, and kind of troll the contours, go a little bit deeper, try to find the deeper bait balls. On the Ottawa, we get a lot of bait that's kind of stuck together. Like there's one river. Somebody's going to listen to this, and I'm going to get a message for sure. But we call it the worm. There's like 1 kilometer, which is, I don't know, 0.6 of a mile.
What's I've never heard of this thing. What are you talking about?
We have this one bait ball that just
goes. Oh, you said a kilometer. I meant, I'm teasing. I'm
just being, it's a kilometer.
What's a kilometer? I'm just teasing. It's, okay.
It's like 0.6 of a mile.
Oh, okay. There you go. How many gallons is that? Can you give that to me? Can you give that to me in bushels, please?
That'll be 2.2 liters.
Liter. Oh, gotcha. Okay, now we're square now. So you got this thing you're calling the worm.
Us Canucks. So, the worm, anyway, we have this huge bait ball. You're trolling, and it just goes on forever and ever and ever.
Mm-hmm.
But on days where the worm is solid, usually the fish are not feeding, right? But when you go through and then the bait's all busted up everywhere, it shows that fish are actually active.
Absolutely. Great observation. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And those tend to be the days for more of it. You know, there's always those fall days where things are not going, and if the worm is just solid and together, it's like, oh boy, it's gonna be one of those days, you know.
Well, we're all looking for a solid worm at the end of the day. You know, when you wrap her up, and sorry, I'm always there for a cheap pun and a cheap laugh. I see that as well. Obviously, we couldn't be any far. As far as further removed from two musky anglers, I think we are like at the utmost extremes, right? As far as distance, and that's a really interesting, interesting observation. Where today, what I had to do to get a bite, which was a tough day, was high bright sun, post frontal. You know, post frontal conditions in the fall sometimes are great. In the early part of the fall, and as things start coming apart, it's more difficult. And I spent the majority of my day looking for disruption in bait, right? So if I pulled into a spot and I saw nice, tight, tidy bait balls, right? I wanted to get out of there. I'm looking for a predator or some kind of predatory activity that was disrupting that. Does that, that's the same take you're doing, right? We're looking for chaos, if you will.
The exact same thing, I guess. With our worm, it kind of...
Oh, it's we don't say our worm. There's no R and worm between me and you right now. Okay, you take care of your worm. I'll take care of mine. Okay.
But yeah, it's true. It comes down to broken baseballs, right? Stuff getting disrupted. Stuff that's in a happy place. Every, you know, all the baits going.
Yeah, waddy daddy da. Yeah.
That's not what you're looking for at all. Right. So when things are getting smashed up, you want to be putting your baits through there for sure. What's your temperature there now? Like, what's your daily temperature?
Where I'm at? This will shock most people. 55.
So that's like tomorrow morning, the boat's hooked up, ready to go. We're launching at 34 degrees.
Really? As far as water temp or air temp?
Oh, that's the outdoor temp.
What's crazy is where I'm at, because I'm in Tennessee and I'm at elevation, the water's way colder than anybody ever thinks. So, like, when I wrapped her up today, it was 56, so it'll be 55. What am I looking at in the morning? Just curious. So, I will launch 43 air temp, 55 water temp. So, Tennessee's weird. Most people don't realize. I think I'm actually probably warmer than most of the Mid, or colder than most of the Midwest stuff right now, or some of it for sure. Which is just,
it's crazy that they're almost the same.
Well, that's a whole other conversation we can have off this podcast. what feeds a lot of my waterways are massive reservoirs. Everything here is bottom release. And so the water I fish most of the time is fed by a reservoir that's 190-foot average depth. So it's frigid. Oh. Yeah. There's times I'll get home from Canada and it's colder here than it is when I left Canada. So no one ever... Don't repeat that, folks. You didn't hear that from me. But it's crazy. I mean, and I think a lot of your assessment... And with you said something about shiners. What's the primary forage base that you're looking for this time of year? Is obviously, I'm dealing with shad and all these funky little fish. You said something about big eyes. Or what's the forage base up there?
I'd say the two big ones are the moon eyes and then emerald shiners.
What is a moon eye?
A moon eye is actually, they're a little silver fish. They're actually fun to catch if you're a multi-species guy.
Lame. You know, they can be.
Yeah, I know.
No, sorry. Catching bait, folks. It's a musky podcast, Jamie. Keep it. Come on. Stay on it.
Inches or so. And then we're not allowed, like, I listened to your live bait podcast the other day while I was driving. We're not allowed to grab, you know, if you were to hook one of those, you can't use it.
Really?
Yeah, we're not allowed.
Oh, that's if you get caught. I'm teasing, folks. That's a joke. Don't do that. Don't do that. What's the deal with it? Explain to me real quick. Do you have to purchase bait from a distributor, or is it like no live bait up there? What's going on there?
Yeah, we can. In Quebec, you can't use live bait, but in Ontario, you can use it. But you can't use perch. You can't use crappie. You can't use. Like, you have to basically buy live bait. And I don't know with the whole inflation thing, but our sucker prices up here are insanity.
I can't. How bad's a sucker right now?
It's a buck an inch.
Really? So a 13-inch sucker is $13?
Yeah, like I had a $45 bag the other day, and then sure enough, one gets whacked and comes off, and you're like, oh, it's like you throw money at a... right down the sewer.
Just burn
right?
it. But, that's crazy. Yeah. That's interesting.
And at that price, I do run some live bait if I have, you know, people casting. You know, I get an extra rod. I don't fish when I'm with guests, but, you know, I'll throw a sucker behind the boat and, you know, they bring him up. That's a little extra action. But at that price, it's like, okay, do I get two or do I get four or do I get five? It's like, you never know, right?
Yeah. Much less one of them dies in your live well or in a bait thing, and you're like, oh my God, I just wasted money. I've always found that interesting where, you know, everywhere I've lived my whole life, I, don't hold my feet to the fire, folks listening. I'm joking about half this stuff, but pretty much if you caught it on that body of water, you could use it as live bait. And I always thought that was the smartest way to do things, like to sort of avoid invasive species. You know, as far as introducing other things, and I've never quite understood that. But the moonite, what family, what genus do they fall under? They're like some kind of, you know, is it in the perch family? It's not in the perch family. Well, what do you know what they are, or sort of what genus, what group they're under?
Oh boy, I would have Googled that before. They're more of a, like a shad type. They're, you know, a silver scaly type fish. And when you do hook them on hook and line, you bring them in. They mm-hmm. bleed like crazy. They're super oily.
okay,
and they're not hard.
This
perfect musky food.
That's funny you say that. And the reason I asked, because you just. Here we have more in common than you think. We have a pretty rare fish called a skipjack, right?
Okay.
Which we call a Tennessee tarpon. They sort of look like a miniature tarpon. They're about, you know, 15, 16 to 20 inches long. Greasy as they get. You touch one, you stink to high hell all day long. And they're impossible to keep alive unless you just put a hook on them and like immediately. So essentially that moon is just a really oily fish, or like muskies are just going crazy on them? Are they schooling fish? What's going on with them?
And they do school too, right? So mm-hmm. sounds exactly like a skipjack. Like if you were to, you take them out of the water, you hook one in the summer, snag one or whatever, they die like
instantly.
Thing. We just maybe it's like our kilometers and miles. Maybe they're just rebranding the skipjacks and the moon eyes. I don't know.
I need to Google real quick. What if I look? You know, folks, we figured out Ottawa and Tennessee are identical, everybody. Moon and moon eye fish. What is a moon eye? Holy goodness.
Check this out. This might be the same fish. This is awesome.
Well, it says, are moon eye good to eat? Why does everything, if you Google, folks, I recommend when you get home, Google any random fish, right? And the first question on Google, are they good to eat? It's like the most redneck thing on earth. Ray Finn.
Geez. Hey, you know what? That's a question I get all the time. Like,
oh, you know, God.
It opens for long nosed gar, and people are like, can you eat them? I'm like, you can eat anything, but do you want to eat them?
That's the question. Yeah, it's you could go out in your front yard and shoot a raccoon and eat it, but do you want to? That's old Herbert's out there digging through your trash can. That's crazy. Yeah, I'm going to have to dig into the moon eye. That's funny because I think when you deal with and these are not shad, but that's a funky fish, man. Not that they're not identical, but it's not that dissimilar as far as composition and coloration of what I deal with, like a skipjack. And that's definitely an X factor, right? Because you go, primarily, most musky anglers, unless you're in the lower Midwest, Indiana, Kentucky, all this stuff, there's not a lot of thought process about shad, right? We're dealing with most of the Wisconsin, Minnesota, Canada, as far as Ontario, we're dealing with, you know, Ciscos as far as schooling fish. But muskies are primarily on walleye and rough fish and perch, right? But then when you throw in something like your moon eye or my skipjack or something of that nature, you have this X factor of like, well, what are they doing and how is it influencing muskies' movement? Because when there's a big old school of oily, fatty, easy to get fish versus some deep walleye, what do you think the muskies are going to do? Right.
Oh, for sure.
They're following the path of least resistance is what they're following. And I think that's why it's so important. I've been harping for years about the importance of understanding your forage base. You know, for you, I'm sure, like, understanding what the moon eye are doing is probably a pretty big factor. What would you say that influences your guiding or sort of your patterning out through the course of the year or the seasons?
Exactly. It's like if you look at you know, the lineups outside the tavern when it's wing night, there's a lot of people outside that.
That's how I find all the fat chicks.
So Oh, man.
I'm sniping them in the line while they're waiting to go in.
Oh,
there's, buddy, there's nothing that a 20-piece and a pitcher won't get. Anyway. Continue. I apologize.
No problem. This is a sidebar. I'm dying. But you know what? Follow the bait. Find fish. That's what it comes
to. That's how Jamie Pastilli finds the big girls. He's looking for food, and the big ones are the fatties are there, is what he's saying. So, if you find the food trough, you'll find the 300 pounders or 50 pounders, whatever you're looking for, your choice. Anyway, Jamie, what a pleasure. I'm sorry I'm an idiot. Thank you for slumming with me this evening. We're definitely going to have you on again really soon. If somebody's trying to learn more about what you're doing without having to hear my dumb ass talk to you, how do they find you?
I'm all over the place. I'm on Twitter at Jamie Pastilli. You can get me on the old gram, the Instagram at Rising Sun Fishing. My website is risingsuncharters.ca. I also do host a podcast called The Tackle Box where we talk to sports stars and talk fishing up here in Canada. So.
Cool. Hopefully we'll add that to the 360 app here shortly. We'll gab about that. But again, just to reiterate, your website, just so people understand, it's not a .com. What is it?
It's .ca. That's the old, I guess that's the kilometers to miles thing. It's a .ca is like Canadian ending. So risingsuncharters.ca. Right. A good thing for American guests to come up here, you get the Canadian dollar, so your dollar is worth 30% or 35% more. So, you know.
Well, in comparison to what? Right, right now our try your conversion rate at the grocery store right now and here. We're bleeding to death, folks. So.
Us too, man. It's they're getting us good.
maybe in a year from now we'll be talking about what size muskie do you eat to feed your family? I'm teasing. It's a joke.
Do you take it or do you flip?
How do you Y-bone them with Jamie Pastilli? Folks, things are bad and we're all starving to death. It's a joke.
Can you eat?
Can you eat them? Can you eat that? Absolutely, folks. Basically, let me ask you this, Jamie. You might have the same thing. I was trying to ramp up. But why does everyone over 60 think freshwater is just a buffet? Like, they're just everything they catch, they're going to shove down their gullet. That's what I've tried to figure out guiding for the last 20 years.
That is true. Like, I get people that'll, you know, especially when I do multi-species trips, how many am I allowed to bring home? Like, I'm not, I don't mind people bringing home, you know, a walleye too for dinner, but you really have to throw them in your freezer to be freezer burned and not
eat
them.
And throw them out. Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
The ocean is not your buffet and the fresh water is not your buffet, folks. You don't have to eat everything you catch. Anyway, Jamie, this is ridiculous. Thank you so much. I'll gab at you here soon. Okay.
Hey, sounds good, man. And, looking forward to hopefully we'll hook up soon. We can talk more Canada and Tennessee and the mighty differences and things that are they're common between us. So thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. What do you think of that? Pretty good stuff.
Very cool.
Jaber.
Yeah, very interesting.
It's an interesting take when you hear somebody from that part of the habitat range. It's so different, but it's always the same. We were sort of talking about. Some of this is the same and some of that is different. And, you know, Tennessee to Ottawa, it's like, whoa, you know, it's a crazy thing. Anyway, let's touch a couple Q&As here. Mort, you guys often discuss how finicky muskies are. And to catch them, the time, lure, and presentation, etc. must be just right. And they sometimes still won't bite or commit. When I find a muskie with a line skip, how long do you spend trying to catch it before moving on? And how many things like lure, collar change, presentation do you do before you come back at another time? So Mort is he's seeing them on live scope, and we've talked about how finicky they can be. And what do you do when you confront a muskie? LiveScope is a weird deal where you can just see fish that are just there, right? At times you'll be driving around and you just look down that there's a muskie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that fish actively feeding or is it sedentary? Is it in a docile, a solvent state? Very well possible. What I'm looking for are follows with panoptics, not so much just suspendos.
Mm-hmm.
The fish that I've just seen that are just simply there, when I'm, you know, looking at panoptics, like, are they there? I don't catch a ton of those fish because they're just kind of there. They're not staged on a rock or a weed edge or a contour. They're just kind of, I'm there. Hey, here I am. Rock you like a hurricane. On occasion, they'll pop off, but not very often. If I see a fish on panoptics that I've not seen, quote unquote, follow, right? So I'm not looking on my boat. I'm not looking for the fish. I'm looking for following fish. Following fish are different than fish you just simply see. The fish you just simply see while you're looking for them, I'll make a couple casts at them. If they don't move, they're not willing to move. That would be my take. That's the weird thing with live imaging where you go, you know, it's a slippery slope where we go, they just because you see them doesn't mean they're going to eat. Dan, hey guys, been an Iron Foundry worker? So being an Iron Foundry worker, we get a plant shut down 4th of July weekend in the week. Was thinking of coming up to northern Wisconsin to fish. Would being on a big lake like Tomahawk be better than jumping from small lake to small lake since the Northwoods will be taken over by tourists? Absolutely not. So Dan's a foundry worker. He's got that opportunity to fish for these things 4th of July weekend. Get out of town and get on small bodies of water. Nobody's taking their wake boat to a 300-acre lake, Jay. What do you think? Mm-hmm. 4th of July week, that time?
I've spent a lot of time musky fishing 4th of July week. A lot of times you find so many people are doing family-orientated things that the actual musky pressure is quite low. And, you know, I think we were talking about last week or the week before, sometimes you might stumble into a lake that's got a great daytime bite. You know, if you do right. that, you just found a gem that you come back to.
You're not going to find 300-, 400-, 500-acre lakes. You're not going to find the jet ski, wake boat, doofus pressure. You know, a big lake like Tomahawk, 4th of July weekend, forget about it. The frustration of the boat ramp alone is enough to keep you off of it,
mm-hmm.
right?
You know, we've got so many lakes around here. You can bounce around and find a few, take a look at the landings.
Come to the muskie shop, talk to Jay or talk to some of the guys there. There's a billion lakes within just a couple miles that no one's going to be on.
Yeah, that's true.
You often find that the highest, quote-unquote, tourist pressure is the lowest fishing pressure as well.
Yeah.
If you're willing to muddle through it. So, you know, all the hotels might be packed and all the roads might be packed and the drive-thru at Culver's might be packed. But, you know, some of these primo little small bodies of water, there's going to be nobody out there because they're just like, eh, everybody's on a pontoon boat, you know, drinking summer shandies or whatever it is. Dan, have you guys ever trolled suckers at slow speeds behind planer boards as like a bobber or have a Ooh. Bobber behind the boat? Absolutely. I've used suckers on planer boards to get them closer to things. Right? So a planer board and a sucker will work just like a live bait and a sucker, excuse me, a trolling bait and a sucker as you drift. So if you're dealing with wind or you're on a consistent kind of trolling motor thing, you can break out the blade planer board and just kind of drive them over. What do you think, Jay? Ever done that?
Yeah, but keep your speed down. I mean, I generally suggest keep it under 2 miles an hour. I mean, suckers don't like to be pulled that fast, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you're just torturing the sucker, you know? You don't
poor
want
guy.
To do that.
Yeah, right.
You know, at a certain point, the sucker behind the planer board is kind of a... more of a deal of just making it happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have a pattern. You're like, okay, I know these things are at X, Y, and Z, and I need to get them to that edge. So if I keep pulling muskies off of a deep weed edge, right? And I might put him on a planer board. If I'm fishing a river, depending on if I'm going upstream, downstream, will dictate that. Carl. More than often, I am fishing in moving water. How do I fish glide baits in moving water? Whoa, great question. A lot of glide baits are going to suffer in current, right? So they might work downstream, but they don't work upstream. The best glide bait I know for moving water is the River Run Manta. It is called River Run because I believe the guy realized, hey, this runs in rivers. Now, it's not a very deep glide bait, but it will work upstream and downstream. So that would be my consideration there, where if we have a glide bait where we're concerned with glide baits with current present, that's going to be something to look at. Jay, any other glide baits you can think of that like sort of work and will fight the upstream nature of things?
Yeah, I mean, when you're pulling a glide bait downstream, when it's coming down, it's running with the current.
Well, it's always going to go to the down, but we got to get that thing to kick up.
Yep. You got to get that thing moving, and it's just like the current's going to mess with its side-to-side ability. So yeah, I think that's a good call with the... with the Manta or the Hang Ten Manta, it doesn't take much to get those things darting side to side. I like Hellhounds in that situation, too, because they have a little bit quicker sink rate than the Manta.
Right.
And the current will help keep that thing up. So,
well, they fight going upstream. I mean, the Hellhound... depend on the rate of flow. I mean, that's the overarching question.
Oh, of course. Of course. You know,
and a heavy flow. The only bait I know that'll work in like really swift water and will go upstream, downstream on your walk is a River Run Manta. Okay. If it's 1 mile an hour, Hellhand will do it. The nastier it gets, the more I'm going for heavy, like, heavy stuff like your hot tails, right?
Yeah,
but you know, moderate current, yeah, a Hellhound will do it, a 7-inch Phantom will do it, but if we're fishing serious current, River Run Manta, or get to your hot tails and get to your heavy stuff. There's not a lot of ways to augment a glide bait to make them work that well in current. So just get you a Manta, and like you said, the Hellhound will work, but there's going to be a terminating point is what I'm getting at. I'm going to try to cut you off, but there's going to be a level of current where you go, ooh, that's not going to work, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And I think with the Manta, or the River Run Manta, it's got that kind of downward angled head. But the Hellhound has it too, but I don't know if it's the plastic in the back. I mean... I'm not sure what makes that thing kick upstream so hard. I would say this. If you're dealing with a scenario where you feel like you need a glide bait, but you're in current, be thinking twitch baits, though. Right? Your shallow raiders, your cranes, or you know, 7-inch slammers, whatever. Don't be afraid to twitch.
It would be easier to feel your way through it too at the point of the cast, you know, the first half of the cast or more, where you can't see the bait, you can't see how it's reacting. Yeah, I mean, a twitch bait, right. Sure. You can feel that it's working right.
Sam asks, I'm new to fishing big rubber. Is it important to tee, shrink wrap, or bury my hooks in bulldogs and medusas? I've seen a thing, Jay. We were just talking about gliders. A lot of people are like, I'm shrink wrapping the hooks on my glider. Okay, don't. I've seen it, but whatever. But burying the hook. So I will bury on a bulldog. I'll bury the hook in the back of it, right? But on Medusa, I will tee the front hook because Medusa is a pretty wide bait. So explain what teeing a hook is in some capacity, Jay, for everybody here.
Well, instead of if you run the three hooks on a treble hook, instead of a triangle, you're bending two of them outwards. So it's 180 degrees on the, so they're flat and there's a bottomward point on that thing. So you got a little bit more hook exposure that way. It's a trick a lot of people run on trolling crankbaits too, or just bigger crankbaits in general. It can be very beneficial, really.
Well, you know, teeing it out, you'll find that with a wide bait like a Medusa, you'll get a better hookup. Like I said, I like the back hook on a bulldog buried in the tail in some capacity. We did it in the, I think in the freaking complete guide to muskie angling or whatever the video we just did. I think I show that.
I think so. Yeah.
It's just a matter with rubber. You got to really move some hooks. You got to really, you know, have an opportunity to hook these fish. So, you know, a tail grabber versus a body grab or whatever it might be. So, the biggest thing with rubber, I'll tell you, is this: sharp hooks, right? The old adage in musky fish, keep your hooks sharp, sharpen your hooks, sharpy, sharp, 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 sharp. I've caught fish on crankbaits of hooks that are rusted and dusty and shouldn't have caught a fish. Big rubber, you better have sharp hooks. You know, when they grab that bait, they compress the rubber like it was live meat, live flesh, and you have to move it through. If they head shoot it and they have to hook themselves, yeah, you get them. But bam, here he is, 1,000, 2,000, right? 2 seconds, a second and a half for you to move that hook from the center of his mouth to the edge of his mouth before he opens his mouth and goes, that's not real. So we better have lasers, right? We better have laser sharp hooks on our rubber baits. Like I said, crank baits, man, it's a hard bait. They hit it, you just pull it through, and you know, if it's sharp enough to hook you, it's sharp enough to hook a muskie on a crank bait, you know, or a trolling bait. But rubber baits, make sure that your points are sharp. Make sure that they're cleaned up. You know, if you get a bulldog or a Medusa or whatever it might be, you get it in some really thick weeds or get some reeds or you hit some timber, check it out. Just spend a second with it.
Yep.
All right. Tanner, it seems like cold water muskies prefer glide baits where I'm at. What are some glide bait presentations that run deep for negative and neutral muskies? We're just talking about them hot tails. Seems like a heavier glide bait, right? So if we look at, like, the Manta, we were just talking about the River Man. River Run Mantas run shallow, and they make a super shallow, right? Deep running glide bait.
No, sinks about a foot a second.
Yeah, where a Hellhound is like, and here's the thing, though. If you let a Manta sink a foot a second, you let it sink down 2 feet, it's going to be hook fouled on the leader, right? They love to foul. Just the way the nature of the beast. But a Hellhound will be sort of, an 8-inch Hellhound would be your basic, like, okay, to get down. If we need a bait that will get down and dirty, that hot tails, right? It's a heavier glide bait. Another thing you could look at is your 7-inch, what is it? Not 7, 8-inch. What's the Hellhound? I'm looking at one. I got my freaking hand on one. Is that an 8-inch Hellhound or a 7-inch Hellhound, the bigger? So you got a 6 and you got what, Jay?
6 and 8.
So you get the 8-inch Hellhound. They have a spot for insert weight on the belly. So you could insert a 1/4 ounce, 1/2 ounce, whatever you see fit, weight to the bottom of that bait, and it'll run deeper, right? So you've got that option. What are some other heavy glide baits you can think of? Because, like, Lynchums aren't heavy. Hellhounds run heavy if, or not heavy, but Phantoms run heavy if you weight them. Hot tails run heavy. What else is a heavier glide bait, Jay?
Well, you're talking about the hot tail. That that new nugget he got out is going to be a really good one.
Right.
And what they call the glide bait. And that comes in two sizes. Warlocks is more of a shallower presentation.
But you can tweak them. You can tweak the tail.
Right. It has a metal tail, so you can get a little bit more downward pitch on it to get it to dive a little bit at a more of an angle.
Right.
Take a Smitty Mercer Creek, add weight to that. That's that fat belly kind of bluegill kind of shad kind of, you know, that cut to the front of it kind of deal. Mm-hmm. It's not cigar shaped. Same thing goes for Smutley dogs. Those are cool wood jerk baits too. But, that again, you know, if you added a half ounce weight to that, to the front or the front third of the bait, you get a little bit more pitch to it and you get that thing to have a little bit sinker quick rate. There's a lot of different Smutley dog
you
options
said
too.
Sinker quick, right?
Sinker quick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got so many of these glide baits run high on the water column. I mean, if you ask me personally, I'm throwing hot tails. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing hot tails. So the nugget. Anthony built me some nuggets that are a little heavy and they have a wobble on the paws and all that stuff. I've always liked the warlocks, but man, you got, if you want a deep warlock, you can tweak it out. Like, you got to spend the time and you got to know what you're trying to hit, right? But if you're willing to do it, it's worth the work. John, I'm looking for a new reel for the 2024 season. I fish a lot of big rubber and a lot of blades. What's the best option for a well-rounded, versatile reel that will handle all of this low speed, high speed, and the rigors of big rubber? Well, that's a big ask, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've been fishing that, what is it, Jay, the TW or whatever?
That Daiwa. Yeah, the Daiwa, yeah, so the gray model. It's awesome.
The Daiwa TW, it is a Cadillac of reels. It's got that T-bar, they call it, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It casts a mile. And what I've noticed with this, I believe that's 7.1 on that reel.
You got a 7.1 version? Okay.
But, okay, so, like, if you point, like, a 5.3-1 reel at a pair of double 10s, it just eats them alive. You don't even feel them, right? That Daiwa, you don't feel double 10s on, like, higher the gear ratio, the more force you'll
resistance
feel.
yeah
more resistance you'll feel. I don't feel that on that reel. So if I had to throw like pounders and I had to throw double 10s, that would be a really good option. It's pricey, I know it is. I'm grossed out by throwing it and I feel bad for it. I'm sorry. But it's a really good reel. I don't think at the end of the day, if I'm looking for like absolute versatility, right? Just if I had one reel and you said gun to the head, you can own one reel, what is it going to be? That 6.3 or whatever, 6.8, whatever it is, the Tranks, Jay. I can't.
The high speed Tranks.
Is it high? Not the high speed, but there's an 8. I'm not talking the 8. I'm talking like the 6.3 or 6.4 or whatever Tranks is. Tranks is not like 6.3-1. It's like 6 whatever. But the 6 series, kind of that standard speed Tranks. Is the high gear? I thought the high gear Tranks was 8. Am I crazy?
The high gear Tranks 400, which is by far the most popular selling one, that is 40 inches per crank. The regular speed one is 30 inches per crank. Let me look up the gear.
I'm pulling it up because I'm talking.
Means about less. It's 5.8-1 on the regular.
Seven, oh my God, 7.6. Mm-hmm.
7.6 on the high speed.
So there's not a 6.3, which is, folks, it is 7 handle rotations to 6 spool revolutions, that kind of stuff. or spool revolutions too, whatever, I don't care. So you got a 30 and a 40. Apparently you're right. I would go with the high gear. My apologies.
Yeah, for plastic, yeah. I want the quick pickup,
but,
for sure.
But the thing is this, you can, a Tranq, you can slow down enough to slow roll things. The reels are tactile, right? It's an odd deal. I have, I'm looking at the shelf in the bait cave. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I have about 30 super reels on the shelf, not counting what I have on the boat, right? I'm talking like really good stuff from Akuma to Tranq to Daiwa, you name it. And so I have basically a musky store in my house where I go, there's 30 brand new super reels of all variations of all speeds, right? I pick which ones that I want to use based on how well they respond to my hand, that tactile feel, that feedback, right? Can I feel my bait? Do I know what's happening? I think the Tranq is going to be your best overall bet for that because it's going to respond well in your hand. I like the Pro-Rex. I'm coming around that TWS on the 5.3. But if you're looking for, John's looking for that one reel, if you just dollars to donuts and we got to have one reel to do it all, the Tranq 400. I don't think you can go wrong. I just don't think you can. I don't know, Jay. What do you think?
They're great. They're the best-selling musky reel out there. Those Daiwas are coming up hard, though. They're really good. That's the next one I get. It's probably a 6.3. I've got another Daiwa and a 7.1. I want one a little bit slower to complement that when I do bring two rods in the boat, but I usually just run the one at 7.1 to 1 gear ratio. Yeah. It's like 37 inches, I think, per crank. I can slow it down a little bit. It's got a power handle. Right. So, you've seen me use it. Yeah, I love that thing.
All right. Steve says, I'm new to trolling, but I'm not limited by line restrictions. What are three trolling baits you have to start trolling? Okay, to start trolling. I want to say a headlock. I just do. But let's leave that out, right? I think a 10-inch headlock is a ridiculously good bait no matter where you're at. But moving on, let's go outside that. I think the best bait to start trolling with is a straight depth rater. Right? I think if you have a sucker colored depth rater or a midnight shiner or just like whatever, they're black, they're white, depth rater.
Yeah.
Because the sucker has a white belly, the midnight shiner has like orange black. Start there, right? The trolling charts are available on the app. They're going to run. There's not going to be a lot of variance and you can get a feel for it. So, if my starting lineup for a new troller, three baits, 8-inch straight depth rater. Don't go jointed, it's straight. The reason being the jointed runs shallower. So, got an 8-inch straight. I'm going to go with, and it's a choice. You have to pick Jake or Grandma. I'm going Grandma 9 times out of 10.
Right? In the 9-inch model.
9-inch.
You got it.
8-inch depth rater, 9-inch Grandma. Right? And the third of that, Triple D ERC. That Triple D is going to be my truly deep bait. So the ERC, Triple D. Those are the three I'm going to troll. Like if I'm in a single line state, those are my three baits. Like if you're like, okay, I control, let's say, Jay, we're on some of these lakes on Highway 70, these small little lakes, and you can fish one line apiece trolling, right? I'd feel comfortable trolling a Triple D by myself.
Like, I know.
You know, we talked about some of the weird things you can do trolling where you can stutter stop with your trolling motor and suspend them. Triple Ds, 8-inch depth rater, Grandma. That would be the setup there. I think that's going to get you done anywhere that you go. You know, line charts are available on the Muskie 360 app, but that would be my like top three. If you allow a little latitude and you go, What's your like optimum top three? 10-inch headlock, right? Then I'm going with Reef Digger. And I think I'm still keeping the grandma in there. Right?
Grandma's too good. 9-inch grandma's too good. It really is. 9-inch
grandma goes, nasty bait. You know, if you said, like, starting, I'm saving some bucks, and I got my first trolling rod, and I got my first trolling reel. Yeah, those three. The optimum, yeah, Reef Digger, headlock, still keeping the grandma. That would be the one. I can't live without my depth raiders, don't get me wrong. But, like, there's something about that 9-inch grandma, and there's something about headlocks. You know, headlocks are glorious because they just simply do things that no other trolling bait will get. Dude, you're going to get that wonder. You're going to get that action out of them. But those would be the ones. One more question, Jay. We had that ridiculous interview with Jamie. We're running over here. Bob, I'm looking for a new trolling motor. What do you recommend? I have an 18-foot boat. Can I get away with 80-pound thrust, or do I need a 112?
I think you brought this up before, and getting away with it, is something you want to try to avoid if you can manage it.
So here's the problem. You make the jump from like 80 is usually 24 volt, and anything above is 36, right? If you're fishing weekends and you don't care, you're not going to Canada, you can get away with 80. If you're going to be out in the big blow, 112 or 115 or whatever the heck it is, you know, some of the new brushless motors, I think, are like something arbitrary, like 116. Trolling motor is one of those things. Big outboards, I don't care what out. You could have a 30-horse outboard, it won't matter. Spend as much money as you can stand to spend on your trolling motor. Boat control is everything, right? So if you're fighting big waves and big wind and you don't have great boat control, you're not going to have great casting control. You're not going to have a lot of precision in your presentations.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and if that trolling motor is on 10, if it's maxed out all the time,
you're going to run out. You should never really, unless you're like on like lake from hell, if your trolling motor is consistently above half power, you're in trouble, right? Go big or go home on trolling motors. My outboards, my boat will do, you know, pretty good speed, but I'm not maxed out on horsepower on that, but I'm maxed out on my trolling motor for a reason. I want to have as much control as possible to hold the brake lines. If structure fishing is as important as I say it is, boat positioning is the most important part of the muskie fishing game. Right? If we're not targeting the appropriate structure, so if the dive curve of our baits and the dive curve of our presentations are not hitting where they should be, we're not going to see the action. So that's super critical. Anyway, Jay, I thought it was a great interview with Jamie. Pretty interesting. We sort of talking about, obviously, this live bait thing, this fall transition. I think next week maybe we'll do like a live bait rubber masterclass, like the combo. I think that'd be valuable, so remind me of that and delve into it. But anyway, Jay Bird, say good night.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good night.
So my child, and let me tell you the tale of how one man faced all the